Hello, welcome to Connectivity episode 314. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan. Joining me, as always, is John Reardon.
Howdy, everybody.
And special guest this week is the man who reviewed Rune Factory 5 without ever playing in a Rune Factory game before, and therefore is a war criminal, Alex DeFreitas.
I need to go see a therapist.
Yeah, yeah. So you came on Connectivity.
Yep.
Yeah. I had my therapy session here the other week. So now that I'm a licensed review score therapist, we can heal here.
We should just do the show during your therapy sessions, and you can just like pull us up on a. We'll just all talk.
Yeah.
Guy will be so confused.
Yeah, no, I'll tell my Elden Ring playing therapist to be like, hey, man. So I'm just going to hit record and we just do normal stuff. And then everybody will know about my personal life as well. And what gives me, what are my stressors? Turns out it's all of you.
Yeah. Mostly Matt Zawodniak.
Yep.
That was a very strong yep.
And Xenoblade 2. Xenoblade 2 gets mentioned every therapy session.
He's the only staff member that I know listens to the show for sure, like every week. And so he's the best one to call out.
But yeah, so we have Alex on the show. He had two reviews recently, and one of them, I mean, I feel like there's a deeper discussion about Rune Factory 5 that is probably more interesting than the game.
yes.
Which is to not really drag the game as much. Like, Rune Factory is a series, you know, spinoff of Harvest Moon / what is now Story of Seasons. And it kind of does that combo of farm sim and, like, action RPG. I forget exactly what the origins are of like Rune Factory 1 DS.
Someone got really drunk and made a bad decision.
Yeah. But like, I know the games have their fans over the years, and it's been a very long time since Rune Factory 4. It came out on, I think, relatively early in the 3DS's life. There was a Switch like remaster that came out a couple years ago, and Rune Factory 5 has been a long time in development. And it seems overall that like, I mean, you mentioned it in your review, Alex, that it doesn't really run that well. And I get the feeling and the sense from the game is that, like, yes, fans of the series will have a good time, but it seems like the problem that a lot of those old school farm sims have is still present here, which is the fact that, like, Stardew Valley came and ate everyone's lunch and they still haven't adjusted.
Sure. Yeah. And also a separate problem that I didn't really recognize in my review because I purposefully didn't look at other Rune Factories or play any of them is that this is the first real 3D Rune Factory. The other ones like might be top down 3D, but this was, you know, you're actually in an immersive world.
What I remember from the 3DS one, it was like the character models were 3D, but it was kind of like that PS1 Final Fantasy thing where it's all like pre-rendered 2D backgrounds.
Yes.
I remember it looking ugly as sin, and then they ported it to Switch, and I'm like, ooh, now it's ugly in HD.
Yeah. I think from what I remember of seeing the Switch version is that like they did a decent job with I mean it's definitely stretching the limits, but like it looks fine.
It looks I mean, it honestly kind of reminds me of the Chrono Cross Switch trailer.
Yeah, that's
like
fair. That's
it
fair.
Looks as good as it can given what we are dealing with.
Maybe I am biased because I saw the Chrono Cross stuff. I'm like, oh, cool. They like smooth the edges over a little bit and you can flip between that and the original look. That's great. And then I saw a bunch of people being like, this is garbage. And I'm like,
yeah,
I mean, it doesn't look that bad.
I do want to know how Square Enix decides what gets that treatment and what is like, all right, remake it entirely in the HD 2D engine. Like, how do they decide?
I don't know, because like it's Final Fantasy stuff that's getting just regular old ports, and it's like,
which would look amazing in the HD 2D
like
engine.
Don't get me wrong, so excited for Live Alive, although I mean, I think reading between the lines a little bit, it's a Nintendo published game, so that might have something to do with why Live Alive is getting the bigger treatment.
That sweet Nintendo money.
Yeah.
Square Enix can only afford cloud ports.
But even like Romancing Saga and Legend of Mana get more remaster treatment than Final Fantasy does.
I don't know. Well, not all the Saga games really got that. I don't know if any of the Saga games got really that much. If like
Didn't like a Saga game get like an entirely new storyline with a character?
Yeah, but that was but like one, the visuals for that game look like a mobile game. and the storyline was something that was like it was like I forget, I still haven't played.
It was like Saga cut Frontier. During development or something.
Yeah, I think it was cut during development. So it was kind of like there was original concept art for it. And I mean, like, definitely work was done for that. Mm-hmm. Also with the Saga series, this is the weird thing with Square. That and I know that, sorry, I've been thinking about Square a lot. I'm very excited for Chrono Cross. It's on my mind. The thing with Square is that like they have a weirdness of if the producer from the game isn't there, that's like some of the reason why like I think Final Fantasy VI hasn't been touched as much is because I think like the people who were like producers on that aren't at Square anymore. But I think it's Takashi Tokuda who's still there. I think he's the Final Fantasy IV guy, and that's why Final Fantasy IV got the after years, the 3D remake and everything, while other games kind of languish. And Akitoshi Kawazu, who's for lack of a better term, the Saga guy, he's still at Square. And I think the Saga games do just well enough that they just kind of let him do what he wants. We're due for another Saga game to get announced. I hope it's the weird board game one. But yeah, I mean, there is, yeah, because I think Romantic Saga 2 and 3, Romantic Saga 2 sucks, by the way. But those are more straight ports. Scarlet Grace Ambition, that was a bigger effort, I think, but that was also, it was a Vita game that was then ported over to Switch, and I think the Switch version was the first time it was localized, but like that's a newer game, so that's a little bit like different of a situation than something like Chrono Cross. But it does get to an interesting thing with Rune Factory in that, you know, not that we want to engage with commenters and naysayers out there, but your pretty negative review,
yes,
got some grief from people who like the Rune Factory series. And it's something that I've noticed for years doing reviews, in how people kind of, there's the preconceived notion, and like how there's definitely, especially in the enthusiast press, there's that desire of like, okay, there's a new Rune Factory game, get the Rune Factory guy to review it. Or like, mm-hmm. Hey, here's Madden, make sure you get the guy who's played every Madden for the last 20 years. Get the Zelda mega fan on this, or else it's going to be invalid. And to like, I think there's value in like, you know, like let's say with Kirby, like I'm not actually, I think Matt's reviewing Kirby for us. We didn't get code beforehand, so that'll be coming after the launch, which will be when you hear this podcast, it'll be out.
That just means he doesn't have to crunch.
Yeah.
We did it for Matt.
But yeah, like there's a value in me coming with, like I've played pretty much every Kirby game and reviewing Forgotten Land. There's also mm-hmm. a value in someone who has never played a Kirby game before coming to Forgotten Land and being like, oh no, you know what, this is actually really fun. Mm-hmm. Even Elden Ring is a perfect example of a game that I have a feeling if you find a review out there for Elden Ring that is someone that did not have a Souls experience and they didn't like the game, the comments are probably several magnitudes worse than yeah. anything that you faced with Rune Factory.
Yeah.
And I get that people don't like that stuff, but then there's also the opportunity that you can have someone being like, oh, you know what? Like, I've never been into these things before, but I played Elden Ring, and guess what? Like, Souls games are dope. Like, you need to have that entry point.
And you need to have, like, just so if I'm watching a review and I'm super experienced with a game, then yes, someone who's also super experienced with that franchise may better reflect what's going to appeal to me going into it. But there are also people looking at these games, like, there's like, if I'm looking at a game that I've never played that's anything from that series before, then I want a reviewer who's never played anything from that series before, because they're going to represent my interests. So as somebody without a bunch of experience in Rune Factory, Alex is a much more valuable reviewer than somebody who yeah. loves every Rune Factory game.
Yeah, I was interested in this game, and that's why I reviewed it. If I right. didn't get the code, I would have wanted a review like mine to give yeah. me a heads up about what the game is all about.
And I'll be real. I've thought about commenting on the review of this, but I feel like it's weird. I was also curious because I'm like, oh, it's been a long time since Rune Factory 4. Like, I do sometimes enjoy those farm sim games. maybe Rune Factory 5 will be one worth picking up. And reading your review, I'm just like, it's not. I'd probably rather go play Rune Factory 4 if I were to play a Rune Factory game.
Or play like Moonlighter or Ever Oasis. Like, there are some other options out there that kind of scratch
just replay
that.
Ever Oasis.
Yeah.
Man, Ever Oasis is a great game.
Well, and I'll also point out that none of the... I haven't looked today, but I haven't seen any comments on that video where anybody offers like an argument to a point that you made. It's always just like, no, it isn't.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for your feedback.
Yeah.
Like, cause there's no, like, the points you're making are valid. They just don't like them.
Right. And I think an issue is that I decided to be honest about the fact that I didn't play the previous games and that sometimes I bounce off of these farm sim games. Like, my point of view with coming into Rune Factory was, oh, I like the fact that they're going to marry the farm sim aspect with an action RPG because that feels a little bit more substantial to have both of those game loops feeding into each other. That seems like the kind of thing that would keep me interested for the entire duration of the game. And it turns out that both systems are kind of just bad. And like I was trying to get up before, I think the fact that this one is a full 3D versus a top-down perspective, it means that the game can't be... A 3D game just really requires the devs to make it very immersive, because that's the trade-off that you get, is that a 3D world is more immersive to be in than a top-down one. But a top-down one is... You don't need to do as much to get... A little goes a long way. There's a little bit of abstraction there. Like, if a character just kind of like wiggles, then that's endearing. But if a 3D animated character needs to do a lot more, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just a lot of especially the monsters and animals are just very lifeless. Like, they reminded me of playing like WoW knockoffs. MMOs where you're just like these like roaming bands of like these are just little groups of monsters that you have to harvest for XP and resources, and they're just kind of like staring blankly at you as you're smashing them. So I'm not sure, coming off of this review, I'm like, do I need to not talk about what my perspective is, especially if I'm saying something like I've bounced off of these kinds of games before and I'm going to give a negative review?
Yeah, I mean, that information should be valuable to the viewer. And I think that it is valuable to the viewer.
Yeah.
But it also like it just so easily gives a certain kind of viewer ammo if you wind up not liking the game, that they feel they can invalidate your review to the point where they don't really listen to what you were saying. Like, there's an interesting conversation to be had there between somebody who likes these games and somebody who doesn't. But if it's the type of person who, given that out of just saying, oh, well, you don't like this kind of games anyway, is going to take it, then suddenly that conversation can't happen. So, yeah, my general rule is that I only highlight my past experience with something if it strengthens my authority. If I'm reviewing a 3D space shooter, like, I can establish, like, listen, folks, I've played a lot of these, I know what I'm talking about. But if I'm gonna go review a football game, then I probably shouldn't say anything going in, because
it's tough, because I think there's also still a value in that, but it does provide that jumping off point for people to jump down your throat because you're not an expert.
Yeah.
I am wondering about the people, though, who would take my comments in good faith and then be like, okay, I know where they're coming from. Let me go find a tried true fan of Rune Factory, because this game got a lot of 7s and 8s from people who've played a lot of Rune Factory before.
Sure.
And so, like, I wouldn't be the definitive answer if you were to ask me, like, is this one a good one? It's like, well, maybe you like it if you've liked these games before. But for the person who's like walking in to the series, I would definitely say maybe, watch a couple of streams and see if you like the atmosphere, because these games are completely built on atmosphere, at least in my opinion, because the actual gameplay systems are very like,
you're looking for a hang, not necessarily like a deep game. Even if even if there's a lot of stuff going on in it, it's still, I mean, those, the just farm sim games in general, like for me, it's more about the hang. Like that's something that I feel like Nintendo figured out with Animal Crossing. Not that I mean, I think there's a difference between like farm sim and lifestyle sim, but I do think that some of the things that Animal Crossing does, especially in New Horizon, and part of the reason why even in a non-pandemic world that game probably still does very well, is because Nintendo has figured out a way to make it more appealing to a wider crowd. Like, farm sims are niche. Guess what isn't niche anymore? Stardew Valley, because, you know, Concerned Ape figured out the way to do it in a way that appeals to so many people and then kept on building on it.
And that's why people wanted Brewster for so long, is just like, it, all it is a pigeon serving you coffee. But people just want to sit in that environment and enjoy it.
It's just the hang.
Yeah, just the hang. And Rune Factory 5 doesn't do the hang part good enough, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's not a world you want to spend time in. Well, it's a little bit like, I remember, so Breath of the Wild came out and everybody was like, holy crap, this revolutionizes open world games and how we interact with game worlds. And shortly after that, Red Dead Redemption 2 came out, and there was a lot of talk from people who were like, this is, objectively, this is fine. Like, this is exactly what we would have expected an open world to be, but because it hasn't yet adapted to the thing that we realize could be way better, like, it winds up feeling more dated than it actually is. And I feel like that's kind of where, like, something like a Rune Factory could be, is when you have indie devs making farming sims and life sims that elevate the genre so far, and then you have them just staunchly standing their ground, but like, it's in 3D now. Like, there's,
I mean, it's so disappointing.
That's gonna age really fast.
Yeah, it's so disappointing because, like, it's been, what started was like 2014, 2015, something like that. Stardew, it's been a very long time, and like, you'd hope that like, there would be some learning shown in Story of Seasons and the Marvelous Farm Sim stuff, but it doesn't really seem like they learned why. And there's a lot of indie stuff in the space of doing this kind of farm sim stuff. I mean, I reviewed Summer and Mara, which I thought was terrible, but I thought like it had some interesting ideas. Like, it was more in like the way it didn't all come together, but like, I see tons of indie games just trying to work on that. Even that Calico game that came out, I think it was at the end of the December Indie World in 2020. I think it ran poorly on Switch, but like, it's all these different games taking different cracks at this, and it just feels like, kind of at the end of the day, with your Rune Factories and your Story of Seasons, that there's still that base that really loves those games, gets into those, and has kind of died in the wool for them. But I feel like Alex's review highlights this perspective very well, is that I don't think they're doing a lot to get new people on board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we mean when we say this game sets the bar for this genre. Like, that's a common review line. And like, what that actually means is that anything that comes out afterwards is going to get compared to your Stardew Valleys or your Breath of the Wilds. And so, yeah, Rune Factory 5 just didn't measure up, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's just like how, as I play more Triangle Strategy, it's going to be hard going back to other tactical RPGs, because there's so many things that Triangle Strategy, like the whole, like, the, as silly as it is, the fact if you fail, you keep your experience, is like a game changer.
Oh, it's especially so friendly.
Especially as that game kind of like kicks your ass a little bit as you get deeper. But with that in mind, I feel like with how Fire Emblem and Triangle Strategy have been, that like, it's hard for me to play certain strategy RPGs and tactics RPGs. You also reviewed the game Dark Deity, which, what's the history of that game?
So this is an interesting game. These are new devs. They formed a company, Sword and Axe LLC. A lot of them like graduated from college in 2020. They started a Kickstarter. It got funded. A lot of the people who like contributed to it and who are interested in it, they are like from hardcore Fire Emblem fans. A lot of the ideas that show up, especially in like the campaign customization stuff, is directly from the Fire Emblem GBA ROM hacking community. And so this game has a very, very, very narrow niche, in my opinion, but it's also like it lands very well. Yes.
Yeah.
Lands very well for me. But it has a lot of optimization and performance issues. Yeah, it's just like also like there's only one game director listed on the website who does, I imagine, most of the programming, and everybody else does like art or business stuff. So I'm not sure how the behind the scenes are working out. Like, is the one guy doing absolutely everything? This is also, maybe you can talk to this, John. This is like a Game Maker Studio game, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah. And now I got to go look at pictures.
I don't see that engine all the often. I will say that the pixel art is very good. I don't think it matches the map art all that well. But there are some very interesting things going on with the systems. And I do like the writing a lot. So Dark Deity has a lot going for it. It's just, it also has like these weird hitches where I'll select a character and it'll just be in like this little running animation it does, and you won't be able to move it at all, and you have to end your turn. And that, you know, for a strategy RPG, that's not great, especially if you're in a bad spot and that's your best character for that move. It's a little bit of a disappointment, but I'm interested to see what they do next, because there are so many good ideas, especially with the armor and damage systems. It's kind of like the weapon triangle, except a lot more complicated, because instead of there being like the rock, paper, scissors aspect of sword beats axe, axe beats lance, lance beats sword, you got slashing damage, piercing damage, crushing damage, cleaving damage, arcane magic, fire magic, storm magic, and I think I'm missing a couple. But then there's also like four different armor types, and they all interact with each other differently. And so something might be doubly effective against an armor type. Something might be completely resistant to it. It's just a lot to keep track of. But what it does do is that it makes most of your characters viable. In Fire Emblem, sometimes you'll get to the point where a character who has a hand axe is just going to wipe the floor with everybody, because the most of the map is filled with lance wielding units. So there are some cool ideas. I would just check out the review if you're interested, but also it's like, it's a very narrow niche. So I'm not sure if I can recommend it to everybody, especially with all the issues it has.
Yeah. Looking at screenshots, the art doesn't exactly draw one in. It has that RPG Maker kind of look to it.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, like some of the assets look pre-made that came with the engine, and some of them were very clearly drawn by someone maybe without the most experience with sprite work, and yeah, a bit of a mismatch of assets.
I do think it's really impressive though that it got funded and they found a publisher, and it had a Steam launch last year, and it's got a Switch port with different languages. Like,
yeah,
I'm very happy for them for making it, but it's not at a place where I would be screaming from the hilltops about buying this game. I think there is an audience for it, and I'm definitely part of that audience, but let's see what they do next, because maybe that would be the kind of game that I could be completely hyped up for.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm trying to say, when did the Kickstarter run?
2020, I believe.
Really? I feel like, I remember hearing, because I remember like being like, Sword and Axe, that's a good name. 2020. You know what? Honestly, good on them for having that Kickstarter campaign and releasing the game like on time. Maybe in hindsight, maybe they could have taken a little while longer.
I'm not sure how much funding they had to go like for a game like this when it's first starting out.
$74,000 on Kickstarter. you would assume if they had the publishing deal, there's probably some extra money there.
Right.
But yeah, maybe they did run out of funding for it and kind of just had to
put it out there. At some point, you have to put the game out. Yeah. Yeah.
And they've been really good. I remember for the Steam release about like putting out balance patches and fixing bugs and stuff, because it did release in like a pretty buggy state on Steam. And some of those bugs are still there on Switch or completely new ones. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's just disappointing. But yeah, hopefully, you know, wish these guys the best in the future. Mm-hmm. And hopefully if they can clean up this version of the game and maybe work on something new. Because at least, I mean, they put a friggin' game out. Props to them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, even a not super pretty game is still way harder than probably anyone gives it credit for that isn't making games.
So, John, you've been in your post Elden Ring haze, looking at Souls-like on the Switch. Can you report from the field?
What's stupid is that it's not even a post Elden Ring phase.
You're still playing Elden Ring.
It's that, yeah, I'm playing Elden Ring, and since Elden Ring is not a Nintendo Switch game, I'm thinking, okay, how can we monetize this game's popularity on our channel?
Attaboy.
And so I was like, oh, we'll do games like Elden Ring that are on Switch for the person who's gotten into this genre and wants to know games they can take with them on the go.
Dark Souls.
Right. That is the easy. Yeah. Dark Souls and Breath of the Wild. But I'm assuming if you own a Switch and you like Elden Ring, that like those two, I assume you know. Played.
You're aware. Can I pick a bone with you, John? Because you've gone on record saying that Dark Souls on Switch is a good port. And yes. I recently played it. And that sound compression is awful.
Okay, but
it
question.
Is horrible.
Question. Yeah. Did you ever play it on 360?
Never played it on 360.
Okay.
Was it just as bad?
No. On 360, it ran at roughly 10 frames per second most of the time. So when I say it's a good port, I mean, I'm playing the 360 version at 1080p at a pretty much locked 30 frames per second with no real input latency. And it's just buttery and it feels incredible. And like, yes, the dialogue that doesn't make sense anyway is compressed. But like, dude, I don't care.
Sure.
It is fun playing Elden Ring because I just give absolutely no shits about the lore. And this must be how people feel whenever there's a cutscene in Zelda.
I tried so hard to pay attention to the lore. And like, I went in and I'm like, all right, it's a Souls game. Like, you have to pay attention because like the lore is not presented to you plainly. It's, you know, hidden, which like in theory, I think is awesome. Like show, don't tell. That being said, you could tell me something. Anyway. So rather than playing Elden Ring, which is fantastic, I was like, okay, I want to do this feature. I've played a good chunk of the Souls-likes that are on Switch, but I haven't played all of them. And mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna replay some of these, do some research, play the ones I haven't played, and put this thing together. So I have been, rather than playing Elden Ring, just binging random indie Souls-likes on Switch, which has been a mixture of like playing great games. Well, less playing great games because the ones that are great, I've already played recently because they're great. and more playing like the games where like we didn't do a video review or something like that because it like wasn't really good enough to warrant one. So those are the levels of games that I'm playing. But I did want to highlight one because Matt reviewed it, who listens to this podcast.
Hi, Matt.
And Matt wasn't a super big fan of it, but it was one that when I started putting together a list of like games I needed to play, Ashen was one that I had never touched, but it was like $40 on the eShop. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to ask Matt about it and ask him to get some footage. And I'm not going to spend $40 on this, but I threw it on my wish list. The next day it went on sale for like $7.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll play it.
This is fate.
But it's, and to be clear, Matt's review, totally fair. But it's this weird open world Souls-like, but kind of the interesting hook of it is that you always have a partner character. So there's always an AI character traveling with you. Where Matt ran into trouble when I was talking to him and I went back and read his review is that The multiplayer component is that at any time, your AI partner can be swapped out without you knowing for a real person who is also playing the game. The problem is that the game doesn't really do a good job of making sure that you and this other player are like doing the same quest, and it is an open world game. So like you'll just be playing and then your AI partner will be like, I'm gonna go over here now and just leave, which like is a problem because like the game is balanced to have a partner with you at all times.
Does this multiplayer character, this person, do they know that they're joining in as a partner, or are they loading up into their own game?
They think they're the main character and that you just walked off in a different direction. Like, so like you're both the asshole.
Yeah.
All the time, which is like, it's a really cool idea if it could be done well, but like it's not. So at Matt's advice, when I booted it up, I went into the menu first thing and just disabled the multiplayer.
Gotcha.
And with that, I've been having a wonderful time.
Hmm.
So I'm in this weird spot of like, would I recommend this game? Yes, as long as you don't play it as it was intended to be played, because the way it's intended to be played is kind of broken. But if you disable it, then like it's a really cool, weird co-op open world Souls-like. And like, I think that's actually a really cool concept. It's got great art design.
Yeah.
The story is like on that Souls level of being like, it has a lot of weird words. Like just the best way I've ever heard Souls plots described was actually on a Game Grumps just started playing Elden Ring. And Aaron on there just described Souls likes as it's just nouns. Like the story is just nouns, and I'm like, that's so, yes, like that's it. It's just a bunch of nouns that aren't related. They're just all said as if they mean something.
Yeah.
And this does that really well. So yeah, it's a neat little game. The other ones that I'm playing are Hellpoint, which is like Dark Souls meets Doom 3, and it's okay. It looks pretty nice on Switch. And I need to restart Decay of Logos, which I've played before and I thought was terrible, but it was so bad at the time that I play it that version never actually came out, and they wound up pulling it down before it could come out and then re-uploading it. So like I've barely played the actual final version of that game. I've only played what was supposed to be the final version of that game that was just awful. So maybe it'll be better. We'll see. But at some point soon, I plan to put that together into a video. And then obviously there's games that I've played recently, like Chronos Before the Ashes, which is great, and Darksiders 3, which is, I've talked about that before. That game is also great.
You would consider that a Souls game?
Oh, Darksiders 3 is 100% a Souls game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the first two are God of War meets Zelda, but 3 is just straight up. You get the checkpoints and you collect souls from enemies and you level up, and like it's you drop all your souls when you die and go back to the last bonfire, whatever it is you visited. It is very directly a Souls game with like faster combat. It's really good and has more kind of like dungeons in it. But yeah, definitely a Souls like.
Yeah, I know. I mean, at some point, I feel like we talked about this back when Darksiders 3 hit Switch. Mm-hmm. Of getting Zach on here to talk about the Darksiders games, because I played most of 1, a little bit of 2, and I got Genesis on sale on Switch, but I've not touched it yet. But I have all 3 of those games on Switch. I will not touch Darksiders 3 until I play those games, and or Darksiders 3 is on a ridiculous sale, which is probably a couple days away from happening.
THQ puts things on sale constantly.
Yeah, those prices crater.
I'm sure I've said this before, but I honestly think that you'll love Darksiders Genesis. Like that, I feel like it's your kind of game.
It's the Battle Chasers Night War guys.
Yep.
Making a game like Battle Chasers Night Wars, but less RPG, more Zelda-y.
Yeah, like Zelda Diablo kind of thing. It's great. It's a great game.
Yeah. No, I mean, it seems like exactly my kind of jam, but I also kind of, I feel like I played through Darksiders 1 and didn't like it that much, but I feel like that was back when I was on 360. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I played it now, it's probably 10 years since I touched it. Cause it was before Darksiders 2 came out on Wii U.
Yeah.
So it would have been more, God, when did the first Darksiders come out? Like 2010, 2009?
Because Darksiders 2 was already out when the Wii U version came out.
Yeah, yeah. But it came out, I think it came out 10 years ago. I think it came out in 2012.
Yeah. Hang on, we're looking it up.
While you're looking that up, I found something interesting about Ashen. Apparently, according to the little blurb here on the website, it says famed fantasy author Mark Lawrence and renowned band Foreign Fields collaborated closely with the development for the narrative and the sound, which means
the music is good,
which means that they got a fantasy author before FromSoft got Gurm.
It's a thing you do.
Was Emilor the first one to do that sort of deal?
I don't know.
No, I feel like that's happened a lot.
That'd be a weird feature to do. The history of like established fantasy authors writing video games.
I feel like there's some of that where it happens with the NES, but it's just that it would have been like, oh, he wrote a paragraph in the instruction manual.
Sure. Yeah.
Definitely on PC.
The first Darksiders was 2010.
Jeez.
Yeah.
God, time is a myth.
Yeah. And the first one is, yeah, it's some people don't like two. Two is incredible. Don't listen to those people.
I was going to say two is just like one, but way lootier.
Yep. And like way better story. And like you go to different environments. You're not just in a rundown city the entire time.
Yeah. Which that's what bugged me about one a little bit. Like the dungeons were good, but everything else around it, I didn't like.
It's well designed, but it's not pleasant to look at.
Yeah.
Two is much more, just has a lot more.
I think I'm fascinated. Well, one, I like Joe Mad art in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that like Vigil Games and, you know, how they divide, because what, there's Airship Syndicate, which Joe Mad runs, and then there's
Gunfire Games.
Like it's basically Vigil after THQ died, they split into those two studios, but they're both still working on Darksiders.
Yeah, they both. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And Gunfire Games is also who made Chronos Before the Ashes, which is the other
Souls-like.
Which is why I reviewed it. I was like, okay. And that one's weird because that one was a VR game that then got ported to Switch as a traditional third person game. So that's a cool game.
So I haven't been playing as much as mentioned, I think, last week. I'm going through a home renovation. So there's just a lot of right now. I'm still in a different room. Walls are being painted. A bathroom is torn up. My hardwood floors are getting refinished next week. So related to that, I probably won't be on the podcast next week. but I've been playing as much. But I did spend some time in a world in which my house has been torn asunder, trying to organize my Switch with folders.
Yay.
And boy, howdy. Here, I'm going to pick up my Switch. All right, so I'm on the home screen. In order to get to the folders, I have to scroll all the way to the right, hit all software, then click the L button to go to groups, and then I can look at my folders.
So convenient.
Yeah, it's so great. Like, I don't think it's the worst implementation, but it's just not, it like very specifically, like it's not going to work for everybody. Like, it's not like I think the way I'll very rarely give credit to the PlayStation UI because I think it sucks. But the way PlayStation 4 had folders was like super useful because you could just have it be right on the main menu and just have the folders there.
Well, yeah,
I'm more thinking like from like a home console and more
Wii U. Then Wii U had the same interface.
I mean, just like because that worked very easily. Like even my Wii U now, I have the first page kind of like some games loose, and I think like media apps were there, and then my second page on the Wii U menu is just like NES, Super Nintendo, N64, Wii. Nintendo first party, indies, like it's all categorized like that. And like I really like it was very useful to kind of sort games in that way. But in this, it is worth noting that the groups are, it's not folders and kind of how I feel like we're used to them and how they were in 3DS and Wii U. It's not sorting them, it's categorization. Because you can put games in different folders, and it's not like when you put a game in a folder, it's removed from the main menu, because you can still, that main menu as was there before this update is still exactly the same, where you have like your 10 most recent games played are up front, you go to the right, then you just have the wall of icons that you can sort by title, publisher, playtime, etc. And like I think it's neat. Like right now I do have my folders. I've got my games that I'm playing right now, headlined by Triangle Strategy. I also I guess actually I did play one game like almost all the way through. I forgot about Shredded Secrets, which I don't know if you guys saw. I guess it's the origin of it is that Girls Make Games, which is a I think it's like a nonprofit or some such, mm-hmm. had some competition for, you know, like younger game designers that are women making games. And then one group won a contest. I think it's a bunch of middle schoolers. And then Nintendo partnered with them to actually make the game on Switch. And I believe,
oh, wow.
The dude from Mommy's Best Games, who longtime listeners of Radio Free Nintendo will know him as the developer of Grapple Buggy, from the legendary Grapple Dem. You know what I mean if you're a longtime listener. But and he also has a bunch of games on Switch worth pointing out. Piggy Ball, Explosion Aid, Shoot One Up. All fantastic games. But I think I saw him mention it on Twitter that I think like he helped bring it to Switch, which is just really cool. And like it's a very like simple platformer, but it like does have it's cool in that like it's about like you play as four different characters. I've played as two of them right now. The first one is just this like middle school girl who's like, I get bullied all the time. And it's like you're jumping around a school trying to avoid bullies. There's ice cream cones that you can collect, and like that's kind of a collectible throughout the levels, and you just go through the levels. But then it kind of evolves over time where it's like, oh, there's this one bully that just chases me around. So then you'll walk by a bully and then the bully will hunt you down, so you need to keep moving. And then she learns how to like, she can has the power to deflect the insults and uses that to like stun bullies, and then she has to like free people, and then that's the end of her story. And then you play as the bully and you realize like things aren't great for him at home, and that, but then it's still all platformer stuff, but it's a really neat little game. And like the whole story behind it is awesome, but that's in my now playing folder that I made. I have my to play, which is basically the backlog. I have an NSO folder where I have all four of the consoles, Tetris 99 and Pac-Man 99, Nintendo, just all Nintendo published games that I have. Which, that's one of the things that I'll kind of call out, is that when you are adding, but live demo right here, adding and removing software to it, you don't have a lot that you can like sort the games by. It's, you know, it's exactly the things on that main menu of like last played, title, and publisher, and like how long you've played them. And it's something that like I wish there was some way to like almost sort it by genre. Because then that would be a better way to categorize games as opposed to going through a long list. Because I don't think this is the kind of thing, like, if you only have, like, 20 games, oh, like, the idea of these groups is pointless.
Mm-hmm.
The real thing is that, like, when you are a weirdo like me who has hundreds of games on a Switch, like, then it's a nicer way to sort them. But in order to sort through them, you need to still scroll through the wall of game tiles to be like, oh, that's one that I want to put here. I mean, yeah. Like they do have some of that genre stuff. Like you wouldn't be able to get it perfectly, but like I think some of that's on the eShop. Like it'd be cooler if they made it more of like a better experience to actually sift through those games, as opposed to kind of making it almost a very manual one. And it is something that it's with the interface of the Switch in general, which I do appreciate that Nintendo kind of made it no nonsense, and it's just about playing games, but. Going back to mess around with the 3DS or the Wii U, there's just so much personality in those UIs. And I feel like just the way you even engage with making these groups, a lot of that personality isn't there. And in the right use case, it's functional. I have a couple other folders there too. Like I do, I made a Square Enix one because once again, it's easy to sort by find publishers and stuff. I have like a Sega Retro one and an Arcade Archives folder. And like, and a multiplayer one. The multiplayer one is actually the one that I find the most use for, because that's an easy way. Like if I have a group of people together, I can just bring up that multiplayer one and be like, okay, these are the games that like we could all play. Like I've even thought about like, oh, do I just try to do this where it's like, here's like 4+ multiplayer or something like that, for local. And one thing that I think might be interesting to do, but once again, it would be such a laborious, like, menial process, is like maybe even doing like, oh, here's my top 10 Switch games from 2017. Have that be a group.
That is something you would do.
It is something I would do. I mean, one, yeah. I've got the tape. I have my Google Docs.
You have your Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, you keep it. Yeah, it'd be updated daily.
I did mess around with making a top 25 of just what I have on my system right now, which is not like I don't have because it's my OLED. There's a lot of games that I have cartridges of that I haven't put into it. Yeah. So it's definitely not everything that I did was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to make my top 25 Switch games and make it a folder and, you know, revisit it every now and then. But yeah, I noticed while I was doing it, I was like, oh, you know what? Like, I don't have. I mean, like, I have Pokemon Arcade. Well, actually, all the Pokemon stuff is there, but I'm trying to think of, like, a notable game that I have. Like, Mario plus Rabbids. I have that physically. So, like, that's not one that I can
That's in your top 25?
Right, I don't know. Probably not, but
I could see it getting close, though.
I think it's really good.
It is very good.
I never played the Donkey Kong DLC.
Me neither.
I
want to go back to it because the sequel's coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably. Game Club. Let's do a Game Club on the Donkey Kong DLC.
I mean, it is a Mario XCOM clone, so it's just
sound like it's like your jam, man.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed it, but I think that was, I mean, it came out in 2017, so like once Mario Odyssey was out, it was over.
Yeah.
I do want to say now that we've gotten the folders that people have been begging for 5 years, I'd like to formally start begging that Nintendo just allow me to have all of my games in a text list with no images. I just want a text list where I can like use LNR to skip through letters of the alphabet. Like I don't need the graphics that take forever to load. I just need a list of games. White text on a black background. That's my ideal OS for Switch, I think. Make it look like Zork.
if you're gonna make me have the only way that I can go on an internet browser is by going to the eShop because it's just loading a web page. Can you at least like give me an internet browser on the Switch? Why not?
Yeah.
And Netflix. Give me Netflix while you're at it.
Though granted, I mean I will admit I'm using game consoles less and less to do streaming stuff. No, like at this point, all my TVs are smart and
yeah. I think once smart TVs kind of broke into it, then a lot of that use. I mean, I was up until I got a TV during the pandemic. I was still rocking my Xbox as my main.
Yeah, before the pandemic, Neil didn't have a TV.
Little known
Neil trivia.
He was just watching Hulu on his Switch.
Yep,
that's it.
That was the first time he'd ever watched a movie. Well, that and the Netflix on the 3DS.
Yeah, Netflix with the disc on Wii. That's how I was watching everything.
Oh, dude, Netflix on disc. Man, the glory days.
I still love like that because what was it? It was Microsoft had the exclusive for the app on Xbox 360. So for PlayStation 3 and Wii, Netflix had to. It couldn't be a downloadable app. It had to be the disc.
Wait, was it a disc on PS3 too?
It might have been. Or I
didn't have a PS3 at that time, so I would not.
Yeah, I mean, by the time I had a PS3, like I didn't use it for Netflix. Because I think at that point, like, I definitely did watch Netflix on Wii a lot. But I also had an Xbox 360. So, like, that was kind of my Xbox has always been my media platform. It's just now it's like a really shitty Blu-ray player.
Yeah, but it can be a 4K Blu-ray player.
It can be. I don't think I have any 4K Blu-rays.
Unfortunately, one of my only 4K Blu-rays is The Last Jedi. So I have not made use of my 4K Blu-ray player, but I have that.
It's fun fact, once there were a billion streaming services with like every movie on them, I kind of stopped buying physical media. That's for movies.
I have a shelf for my Star Wars stuff, and I like put the Star Wars movie on there and go and then turn on Disney Plus to watch Star Wars.
Yeah, like there's still I do have all 8 Star Wars movies. I have all those.
So what is that? The original trilogy, the prequels, Rogue One, and Solo. No sequels.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't have Rogue One or Solo. I don't think I have those on Blu-ray. I have Force Awakens and Last Jedi. Last Jedi, I think. I'm trying to think. When the hell did?
No, do you have the Clone Wars movie?
I don't have the Clone Wars movie on Blu-ray.
I
have Spectacular Spider-Man on Blu-ray, though.
There you go. Wow.
Hell yeah.
Did you guys know there's a
rid of that?
There is a novelization of the Clone Wars movie, like a full length novelization of that garbage movie.
It's a very bad movie.
How many times does Jabba the Hutt's son burp in the novelization?
I don't know. I haven't read it, but like I'm tempted.
You open it up and it just smells like a burp.
Smell-o-vision.
Yeah. Probably goes really deep into his backstory.
By the way, if you did want the Netflix PS3 disc, it's $8.69 on eBay.
So it was on disc?
Okay, yeah.
That's the thing? Okay.
I remember hearing that Microsoft had like an exclusive deal with Netflix specifically for an app on a game console.
Interesting. Okay.
So that's why they were discs. But yeah, no, I mean my TV was just, it was an older TV that wasn't a smart TV. That's all.
Destructoid says, don't get rid of your PS3 Netflix disc anytime soon. This article is from 12 years ago. I think this is out of date now.
So that's folders on Switch. It's fine. I think there are people that are going to get a lot of use out of it. And I think there's a lot of people that are going to be like, huh, and then never bother.
Yeah, I have no folders yet.
Yeah, I did not bother. I was like, oh, this is exciting. And then I looked at it. I was like, yeah, I don't know why I would use this. I think multiplayer is the only thing to like just be able to quickly at a glance look at what are the options for multiplayer.
Yep. Yeah, it was my wife was catching up on the Gilded Age. And I was just like, I'm going to mess around with
this. I love that show.
It's a really good show to half pay attention to while you make folders on your Switch.
It's my review. Great.
Anyway, let's get to listener mail. And then we can call it an episode.
All right.
So cool. let's do this first one coming from Twitter from Stephen Woody. He says, everyone has been talking about which 3DS games to get before the eShop closes, but they seem to have missed multiplayer games. I've got two 2DSs for my young kids. What games would you recommend and how many copies will I need? Metroid Prime Federation Force.
Yeah.
Every copy.
Yeah. And like that's every copy costs like a combined $10.
I would say Metroid Prime Federation Force. I mean, that's four player. I believe everybody needs their own copy of the game.
Yeah.
So however many people you want to get in there, works local play. Triforce Heroes, three player local play. Only get that if you have three people to play the game. It's a terrible experience solo, and it's still kind of frustrating in two player.
You can go deep into the backlog and buy Heroes of Ruin.
Yeah. Steel Diver. I know Steel Diver has some download play and local play.
Steel Diver Subwars.
Yeah. Well, is that one going to be... Well, that's free to play, but like, was there local play for that?
I guess I just assumed so. I don't have friends, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah. We should play that online before.
Y'all play Final Fantasy Explorers?
It wasn't good.
Okay.
It was okay. Like, I think...
Was that that was like Monster Hunter?
Yes.
Yeah. So
Final Fantasy Monster Hunter.
That was... I had the power of I imported that, and then I got announced for Western localization like a week later.
Nice.
But I think I reviewed that. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I was pretty hyped for it. I just remember it was okay from what I remember.
Yeah, I just know it's like it's a late stage multiplayer 3DS game, but it's kind of like Monster Hunter, but Monster Hunter is good on Switch now, so.
Yeah.
Kidricus Uprising. Like I don't know if that's just online, like. Or if you can do
I would
local
assume
on
any
it.
Of these games that have online could also do local.
Yeah.
I assume.
I would double check, but Kid Icarus Uprising is pretty fun.
Yeah. This abstract, if you want to drown in fan service menus and gameplay systems, Final Fantasy Explorers is a game for you. I gave it a 7. Lack of weapon diversity, but it's got a lot of good fan service. And there's fun local multiplayer. There you have it, guys.
You could get Star Fox 64 3D, which only has local multiplayer. And then also your children can see each other on their 3DS's cameras as they play.
Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon has the Scarescraper mode on download play that I played a lot of. Luigi's Mansion, the GameCube one that they remade on 3DS, I believe that has full co-op available via download play, I think.
I think you're right. Isn't that the Guiji stuff?
Yeah, yeah, that's what, like, Guiji is, there's time travel, it's weird. Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix apparently has a four-player multiplayer mode that I didn't remember existing.
I mean, if you're getting this for your kids, Minecraft, well, there has to be, like, a new 3DS. They can't be a...
Yeah.
It depends on which style. 2DS you have, I guess. Yeah. There are new 2DSs.
Right.
Sushi Striker, everybody's favorite 3DS game, which is dirt cheap because in this hubbub, I saw that Sushi Striker sealed on Amazon was $5, and I bought it.
I'm looking at a list that says Fire Emblem Fates. Don't. Not that one.
Yeah.
Fire Emblem's never been good for PvP.
I mean, then you have stuff like New Super Mario Bros. 2, Donkey Kong Country Returns, a lot of those platformers that have co-op that you can either do in local play or download play. Your mileage may vary with those, but if it is something that, like, the co-op stuff, some of the co-op platformers might be worth investing in, although some of them, like in the case of Donkey Kong Country Returns, if you have a Wii, then it's right. probably easier to do it there.
But, better experience.
Yeah.
Better yet, Tropical Freeze on Switch is
it's a very like good
the
video
best
game.
2D platformer in 30 years.
Yeah, with very rare exceptions, are there games that are on this list that I'm looking at that, like, a Switch version has a better one going for it? So,
yeah,
I'm not sure if the 3DS was ever, like, a real treasure trove for multiplayer games.
Theater Rhythm. It says here there's some local multiplayer that I don't really remember, but Theater Rhythm arguably might be... I think Theater Rhythm might be a top five 3DS game for me.
I praise.
Like, Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy might be one of my favorite rhythm games of all time. Like, I think the only reason why I wouldn't say it's my favorite rhythm game of all time is because nothing will top the feeling of Rock Band at its peak. But, like, I actually wound up playing, like, 3 hours of it when the 3DS stuff was announced, and I wound up downloading a couple new DLC songs. There's some Live Alive music available for DLC on Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy Curtain Call.
Interesting. Team Kirby Clash, if you're in a Kirby mood.
Yeah, I think there's some Kirby multiplayer stuff there, too. It says Kid Icarus Uprising on this list that I'm looking at has local multiplayer. So
okay. There you go.
Definitely recommend that.
And then play the single player. Just both children, just play the single player next to each other, because it's incredible.
And apparently Subwars also has local multiplayer, which...
Good.
I'd recommend that game. Tank Troopers! Tank Troopers, baby!
Actually, you know what? If your kids are playing Tank Troopers or Sub Wars, let us know, because, like, we'd love people to play with.
Yeah.
We can start a guild.
Yeah. And then here's one that I don't know how good I imagine the local multiplayer is, like, using your little battlers to fight, but it's a level 5 game, LBX, Little Battlers Experience.
I played a bit of that.
It is definitely, like, a level 5 ass level 5 game, but I remember, like, it's before those got bad. Right on the cusp of, like, when it's like, okay, there's been 15 Yo-Kai Watch games and they've used the same town 8 times.
I miss level 5 at its peak.
Yeah
How did maybe I just wasn't following the Yo-Kai Watch fan base. How did they get away with that when Pokemon gets in trouble for using the same animation for Pikachu?
I just remember, so, like, Yo-Kai Watch 1, I was super excited. I think that came out the same day as a Call of Duty, and I did the thing that I've only done a couple times in my life that I love, which is go to a big GameStop midnight opening for, like one time it was, I went to a Madden midnight opening and got the Wii version, and people were like, why the fuck are you doing this? I'm like, because I want to play it on Wii. And then I went to a GameStop the night of a Call of Duty or something, and then had a pre-ordered copy of Yo-Kai Watch. And I, like, even, like, went to go, like, be like, hey, like, can I pick this up at midnight? And he's like, yeah, if you want to.
Yeah.
So I went and did that. And, like, I enjoyed the first Yo-Kai Watch. It's Mega 10, but kids, in the way that Pokemon is Dragon Quest, but kids.
I will say, as somebody who has worked midnight sales for video game stores, the guy that comes in to get the wrong game at midnight, like, that's the best. Like, I love those people.
I love it. I love doing that.
It's so good. I've said it before on here, I think, but I did that for Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate on Wii U, which came out the same day as some Gears of War game.
Yeah.
And I was like, boy, there's a lot of people here for Monster Hunter.
I don't know if GameStop even does like midnight releases anymore.
A lot of that, I think, kind of went away with the pandemic, where it was like, well, we can't. And then as stuff started to open back up, I think everywhere kind of went, maybe we just shouldn't, because like, we don't want to. I don't know that it's financially worth it.
I worked at a GameStop when I was in college, and it was this whole thing where like GameStop was going to have like a couple big locations that were going to have like online hookups in the back to do tournaments and stuff. And I don't think anything ever happened with that, but I was there like year one.
Yeah.
I like worked during the holiday season, and I don't think anybody knew this GameStop existed. So there was like, I think it was a midnight launch for a Call of Duty game, and literally no one showed up, and I was working the midnight shift. So at a certain point when we realized that no one was there, like the store manager got like a bottle of whiskey, and then we just got very drunk and played Call of Duty. that was the most fun I think I've ever had playing a Call of Duty game.
I distinctly remember like having some shifts where I would like we'd close at like 9 or whatever, and then be back there at 10:30 for the midnight sale, and there'd be groups of us that would just be like, all right, well, we're just gonna stay here and go hook up a PS3 or something in one of the TVs and just hang out and play Skyrim. It was a good time.
But anyway, Yo-Kai Watch. I don't think that there's a fourth one that I don't think ever came out outside of Japan. That series just died.
Yeah, it burned bright and quick.
Yep. Level 5 still hanging on, I think.
Yeah.
All right, let's go for the last listener mail from Chariot Goblin. Following up on last week's show, his top 3 Mario Kart games are: number 1, Mario Kart Wii; number 2, Mario Kart DS; number 3, Mario Kart 8. And he adds this: Mario Kart 64 would definitely be at the bottom of my list, since I feel the controls haven't aged well. Pretty much agree.
Yeah,
I've tried going back because I have a lot of nostalgia for Mario Kart 64, but it's doesn't feel great.
Yeah, no. I actually played a couple Grand Prix last night in Mario Kart 64. And yeah, it's hard to go back.
Yeah, I have so great many good memories about though. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we're talking about Mario Kart the DLC, and I guess Matt had heard about how Calamari Desert, which is like the desert run from 64, it's gotten a lot of cool like remix versions in Tour.
Mm-hmm.
It would be really cool if that were to come over to Mario Kart 8 Deluxe with the DLC. But like playing even just normally playing that race on Tour is just a warm nostalgic hug for me. Because I've played that race so many times when I was younger.
Yeah. Well, that's something Tour probably doesn't get enough credit for, how nicely their remasters look of those older courses. Because they don't use the same remasters that are in like the other Mario Kart games. Like they do their own and they look great.
Yeah. And Calamari Desert, like they have like there's a remix version of that course where basically like there are two laps and they're different because you wind up taking a turn and you go through the like the train tracks.
Oh, sure.
And then you loop around and you go in a different way. Like, it's super neat.
You do what we all did as kids and just hop on the train track and drive around that instead. Yep.
And then Cherry Goblin finishes up by saying, regarding the first wave of DLC, is it just me or is the Tokyo Blur course pretty boring? It's fine.
Yeah, it's... like,
it's not the standout for sure, but
if you were to say that that's the most boring course of those 8, like I wouldn't fight you on it.
What are the 3? Because they have the Paris one, which has like the great flip at the end. You have Ninja Hideaway, and you have Tokyo Blur. Is there another Toad Circuit?
Is that a Tour one?
No, that's a 3DS one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's the first one in 3DS, like the first course.
Yeah.
I remember in Tour, you do, I think
they use that course. Yeah, that's the tutorial.
Is used a lot.
Well, they use it's if you're downloading updates and it's like, do you want to drive around aimlessly while you download updates? Then you get Toad Circuit.
Yeah, that's the most I've done in Mario Kart Tour is playing Toad Circuit, trying to get used to the controls and being like, I want to like this game.
I would kind of agree. Like, I'm actually trying to think. I basically played through the DLC. Like, I did Grand Prix twice for both packs. I don't have any memory of the Tokyo Blur course. I think that's the problem of some of the city stuff is that, like, some of them are really cool and unique, and the other ones you're like, I'm driving through a city.
Yeah, I think it looks nice. I mean, I said in the video that we put up, and some people got mad that I really like Tour's art style when represented on Switch. So, like, I think that the Tokyo Blur course looks awesome. But yeah, Paris, of the two city levels, Paris is definitely stronger.
Yeah.
And I do love that both of them do that, like, the thing of, like, you get two laps the same, and then you switch for that last lap.
Yeah.
Which is in Tour as well. But I'm glad that that stuff got carried over.
So, Alex, now that you're here, what are your top three Mario Kart games?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, interesting. I usually go with whatever is the most recent as the top one.
Tour?
Yeah. the booster course is the most recent.
That's true. Nintendo does list that as its own game on their official listings. So,
yeah.
I guess I'd say it feels really good. I think it looks and the music is fantastic. It's weird going back to it because I forgot about how great the music is. No way to boost the music in any options. So it just kind of ends up getting drowned out by the chaos that is Mario Kart.
If you use Mario Kart TV to watch your replays, you can turn off the sound effects in there.
Wait, does it affect the entire game or just your replays?
No, just the replay.
Okay.
But if, say, you're sitting there gathering a bunch of footage of replays and you don't want to hear the sound effects the whole time, it's very helpful.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I'd probably say 8 as number one, but it's not because I have any strong feelings towards 8. I just think it plays well. It's what everybody's like playing currently.
Sure.
DS is probably number two. I love the B-Dasher. I spent a lot of time like customizing my icons for my cards. Yeah,
that's a thing we didn't talk about last week, was that you could draw your own icon. And then go online with a picture of boobs on your car.
Yeah.
I did a Triforce. Draw dick. I was a pure little boy. Very much a Zelda fan with my Triforce, B-Dasher Mario. And I had great online. And, there was snaking. But I feel like I wasn't really affected by it all that much because I didn't know of it. If I knew about it, I would have been super mad. So...
Well, that was when they started to introduce like ranking systems. So I feel like all the snaking people gradually elevated in score to the point where they were only playing with other snaking people. And then the people who were playing the game regularly just kept playing and it was fine.
I didn't hang around long enough to get to that point.
Yeah, I played a lot of that online.
I guess my number three is probably maybe a toss up between Wii or Double Dash. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I believe ours, but ours, John, was DS.
We put DS at top and then Wii.
And then Tour? And then,
well, yeah, we had Double Dash and Tour. I think we're tied.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'll say Wii because I think you can only do this online. with the motorcycles. No, the tricks.
Oh, yeah, dude. The tricks were so great in Wii.
The tricks are great, and I love that they kept them because the tricks, what they do is they give you another little thing to like.
Yep.
Interact with the environment. I love Coconut Mall, and just going back to it has really reinforced the fact that Coconut Mall has just all these little places where you know what, that's a ramp. I'm going to do a trick off of that and get a little boost, and it's a lot of fun.
Do you guys find yourself impulsively doing that when you play Mario Kart 64? Because like every time I go over a bump in that game, I jump.
Yeah,
because I'm like I gotta do the trick.
Well, I didn't play Mario Kart 64 enough on NSO to I booted it up and I was like, ooh, this feels bad. And I have access to Mario Kart 8. So why am I playing this?
I don't have whatever that thing is where when I start playing a game I don't like, I stop playing it. I just kind of am like, this doesn't feel good. I'll keep going. We call
that Berubiitis.
Yeah. Now, I don't 100% it.
Yeah.
I just keep playing it.
So you have a mild case of Berubiitis.
Yeah. Yeah, like I'll roll credits, but like I don't need to do everything.
That is a wild condition. I don't understand, like, booting up a game, realizing that you hate it maybe a couple hours in, and then being like, I need to play another couple hundred hours of this one.
It's one of those things where, like, it was such a freeing moment because it almost give me like it would give me agita like 10 years ago, where like I kind of referenced it earlier, Darksiders. I enjoyed Darksiders. I did not finish that game, but I was like, I am satisfied. Sure. I like some of this game. I don't like all of it. I've put 20 plus hours or whatever into it. I'm done. And that was, I think, one of the first games that I did that with, that I was like, I got to this point. I'm like, wait, I can just stop and not feel bad about it. Cool. And I do that more. I mean, like, yeah, there's certain games that like, oh, I would like to roll credits of this game over time, like I'm gonna beat the Mario games and the Zelda games and stuff, but
yeah,
like there's a lot of things where it's like, you know what, like I put my time into this game, I don't need to get to the bitter end.
Yeah, always good advice.
Yeah, and I definitely don't complete every game, but I will keep playing it for longer than there's any reason that I should continue to play it. I did stop playing Guardians of the Galaxy once I had an entire break time at work where I didn't ever leave a cutscene. And I was like, I don't want to play this anymore.
It's like, I've heard that game's good, but like I can just watch a movie.
Yeah, it's Uncharted.
Yeah.
It's a really good movie. The writing's great.
Yeah.
It looks pretty, but like, boy, is like, you just never get to play that game.
Yeah, like it's the kind of thing where like when it comes to the Uncharted series, like I don't care anymore. But I played Uncharted 2, and that shit was mind-bending. Like, it was so fun to play. And then I got to the end, I'm like, I never need to play another one of these again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I got a little bit into 3 and was like, nah, the second one was real good. I don't need to sully that experience by playing the same thing over again. And I know.
That experience.
And I mean, like, yeah, there's other people that, like, eat that up more than me. That's cool. But for me, like, I get the appeal. It's just doesn't appeal to me the same way that it does other people.
Yeah, I definitely dropped God of War like a bad habit about halfway through.
Boy.
Yeah. I still need to play the new one of those. Mostly just because it has Teal'c from Stargate SG-1 as Kratos now.
Boy.
And like that's a thing I like.
I do. You know what game I want to get as far as PlayStation games? I gotta play Spider-Man.
Oh, have you not so played good. It at all? It's so good.
I have
great.
Not played it at all. There was a while where I didn't really play on my PS4 that much, and then I was playing Final Fantasy VII Remake and was like, it's the pandemic. Maybe I'll go and play Spider-Man after this. And then my PS4 died.
You know, that's one that I played a good chunk of, and then eventually I just got, like, it's good. I just got to the point where I'm like, I feel like I'm doing the same thing a lot. And I've had a good time with that thing, but I think I'm done doing that thing.
You know what? Spider-Man game I never want to play again, but I have such good memories of Spider-Man Web of Shadows.
I know I've played it, but I have no memories of
it. Yeah, I believe that is the one where you fight Wolverine and he just shouts Marvel trivia at you and you have to answer it quickly.
Good.
It's so good. Where it's just like, what happened to this guy's parents? It's just like, shit, Wolverine, I don't know. He's like about to like just cut your head off. And he's just not like, well, what happened to Dr. Otto Octavius? What happened
in
to
which
his wife?
Universe?
Yeah. Is it is the female version? I don't know. Shit. Mary Jane, no.
Anyway,
that's probably an episode of Connectivity.
Yeah, the episode ended at some point.
Yeah, Alex, thank you thank you for joining us, talking through your feelings.
Yeah, thank you for the therapy session.
I hope you feel better.
No, yeah, I do.
That's good. Hopefully your next review will be way more positive. So anyway, are you a baseball fan?
Mild baseball fan.
It got a lot of experience with the games.
No.
Okay, perfect.
You're
doing MLB The Show. in the opening paragraph say, I don't really play baseball video games or follow the sport, but
I really like Mario Superstar Baseball for the GameCube.
That's already too much experience.
I mean, that's part of the reason. I mean, I'm surprised I haven't get, well, no, I did get dragged for that for my NBA reviews. Although at this point,
well, you get dragged for giving NBA too good of a score.
Yeah, that's right? The thing is that, like, because for me, like, NBA games on Switch, that was the first time I played them, which is kind of perfect because it's like the first time they've been on Nintendo systems in a decade. So yeah. I don't know, maybe that's the audience for it. And for me, I'm like, wow, these games are really good. And then people are like, but there's all these microtransactions. And I'm like, I literally played 20 to 30 hours of this game and never had a problem with the microtransactions.
Yeah.
it's there's a lot of content here outside of the stuff where it's you literally spin a wheel. And that's how you power up your create a character. They've gotten more nefarious with it in later games.
I just remember there being one guy in our YouTube comments who would always come to like my reviews. And anytime I gave a game a lower score than you gave NBA, he would point out that I gave the game a lower score than you gave NBA. And it was great. I liked it a lot. It was the best comments.
I gave a Super Monkey Ball 3D on the 3DS. I think I gave it like a 3 or something. It was a bad game. And there was somebody that whenever I would review a bad game higher than that would be like, oh, so this is better than Super Monkey Ball 3D? And every time I would just be like, yes.
Yeah.
I really didn't like it. It's great that you liked it more than me. I did not like that game.
I'm glad that game has like one passionate defender.
Yeah, like it's Monkey Ball is a complicated franchise with like 2 good games.
Yeah.
2.5.
One of which is, of course, the Game Boy Advance game.
Wasn't that like an impressive port?
Yeah.
Sure. All right, that's, we can marinate on that for next week. Talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.